our next guest here on the Crusade Channel. The book is called Dressing with Dignity, and it's written by Colleen Hammond. And Colleen was actually sent to us as a result of a prayer by Melissa Linscomb. Melissa said, hey, you know, I know Colleen Hammond. And I said, should I know that name? She said, yeah, you should. You talk about it all the time, dummy. So Melissa sent me a copy of the of some of the press clippings about it. And then I read the book, Dressing with Dignity. You know, any book that quotes Dr. Alice von Hildebrand, and it's got to be a good book. So I'd like to welcome to the show here for the first time, the one and only Colleen Hammond. Colleen, author of Dressing with Dignity. I can see you. You can see me. You're dressed with dignity. I even put the sport coat on today. How are you?
Doing real good. How are you?
I am well. Now, you got to love a guest that has a built-in microphone set up in an office studio and a swivel mic and a boom and the whole nine yards. Colleen, what do you think about my intro? Was that too hard on modern American man and woman?
Oh, I thought you were quite subtle, actually. You know, part of what I do is a whole background. I'll go into secular schools and I'll do the history of fashion, and I will show them how people have dressed for the entire time of human creation.
Right.
You know, we go back to chiseled artwork and, you know, as far back as we can go. And it was always the slaves and those people that they considered animals that they allowed to show a lot of skin. And so what are we saying about ourselves? How is this empowering ourselves? You know, when I started in television back in the 80s, long time ago, but there was this gal that was also, she was in weather, and they double mic'd her, which, you know, we had two lavaliers just in case one breaks. But what they did is they crisscrossed, you know, the cords.
Sure.
Across her chest. She filed a sexual harassment lawsuit in $1 billion. I mean, it was just amazing because they were sexualizing her. This was in the 80s. And then along came Madonna and the boy toy, and, you know, the society kind of. Well, so there was that dichotomy in the 80s between like the preppy fashion, and then there was this boy toy. And unfortunately, you know, it's physics.
Let's talk about the Weather Channel for just a moment, because you used to work there. Now, what years did you work at TWC? When John Anderson, the founder, was there?
85 to 92.
Now, most, you know, for you kiddies out there, you don't even know that, yeah, we had cable TV back in the 80s, if you can believe it. Colleen, I was telling the audience a story the other day about Ted Turner launched CNN in 1984. Now, people think that CNN just came along in 91 because nobody was watching it. You couldn't pay anyone to watch. No, I'm serious. The only reason anyone started watching cable news was to watch the bombs dropping over Baghdad. I mean, that's that. Well, the Rodney King riots, that's the riots over Rodney King, O.J. Simpson's chase, and then the war in Iraq. Those are the three events that made cable TV what it is, or cable news what it is today. But CNN, headline news, was on for 7 years. Seven years before anyone even noticed it. It wasn't on in any stinking airports. You'd had to ask for it. If you got cable TV, you actually had to pay for it. So it's been quite a revolution that we've seen. And now we've seen this revolution go like this. And now it's gone like this. So I watch the Weather Channel today because I tell my kids and my wife, it's the least offensive thing on cable television.
Pretty much. Sort of.
But there are, from time to time, there is a Weather Channel a newscaster, a female, that I go like, oh, come on. You could, really? Now, I have noticed, though, and this maybe it's just because I am watching it a lot lately, but I have noticed that there's a gentleman on there. I don't know his name, but he usually does Friday mornings. He fills in for the other guy, for Jim Cantore. He's always sport coat, vest, and bow ties. Always very well dressed. And there's one of the gals that's on there that is always very modestly dressed. I've even seen her wear a dress down. It may be 4 inches below her knees, which I almost fainted. I went, I didn't even know they made those anymore.
Hard
so,
to find.
Well, now, I guess my first question to you is, should I notice things like that? And if I do, should I be telling people, hey, There's a good, there's an example of modesty.
You know, okay, for, oh my goodness, my brain just went in five different directions at once. I did my, subconsciously opened about five tabs on my computer. First of all, the word modesty, hot button, total hot button.
Okay.
So, when we say modest, first of all, it's kind of a subjective word, you know, because different faith beliefs, religions, or whatever, will have a different concept of what is modest and what isn't. So when we're talking about exterior modesty, pretty much all religions and true religions, thoughts will say from the shoulders to the knees, nothing tight, nothing clingy, nothing right. Sheer. Why is this so radical, right? So I don't use the word, this is why I named the book Dressing with Dignity. I don't use the word modesty because it's such a knee-jerk reaction with people. Mm. And then you get into, oh, you're an Islamophobe. It's just, you know, all sorts of weird things. So that's why I called it Dressing with Dignity, number one. And so I try to stay away from that word.
Okay.
Number two, there's an interior modesty as well as dressing exteriorly right. In a modest manner. And I recently, a couple of years ago, advised, I have a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't say who it is, but it was a woman who was running for president that wasn't Hillary. I advised her on her dress as an image consultant and a stylist. Dignified. You know what's interesting is when you look at politicians, do you see them bearing their breasts? Do you see them with super short skirts? You know, not the really successful, high-powered ones. Because, again, I think there's just that subconscious thing that we all know.
Right.
That if somebody's showing a lot of skin, they're not intelligent. It's not something we label them with or think consciously. There's just a subconscious reaction that as human beings, endowed by our Creator, that we understand that, that ain't right. Something's going on there.
Well, I'd like to quote you, if you don't mind. This is from Dressing with Dignity. And by the way, I do use the word dignity. I stumbled on it in reading someone else. I love nomenclature. So I love throwing the word sartorial sloth out there. Because most people will say, sartorial is a beautiful, it's got a cadence to it. Well, I'm very impressed with your sartorial choices today. It's just another way to say that someone is well-dressed. But I recently started using the word dignity because I read a piece by, I was in a book, and I was reading about how, well, you dress with, you treat someone else with the dignity that their human soul is accorded. Because God blessed them with it, and I'm just going to take it on good faith that He meant for it to be dignified. I'm not going to offend it with my slothful dress. I'm certainly not going to. It's just the idea. You know, our parents used to tell us what impression matters the most. See, Colleen and I agree. See, I like that. First impression matters the most. You know, what else did they tell us, Colleen? And by the way, my guest is my special guest on YouTube and on the radio component here, Colleen Hammond, who is gracing us with a video presence here via Skype, author of Dressing with Dignity. Book is available in our bookstore at mikechurch.com/shop. You only get one chance to make a first impression. Why would anyone think that the first – now, maybe some people just think this. Why would anyone think that the first impression that one is going to make is going to be a first impression that is, as I say, cargo pants shorts, flip-flops with your skanky yellow toenails for the world to see, a T-shirt and a baseball cap on turned backwards, and you're 58 years old? What's wrong with this picture, and what is wrong with you, sir? Where did the train go off the rails here? Now, here's what you wrote in part. Now, this is morally aimed at women, but I think it applies. Dressing like a floozy tells the world, look at me, want me, lust after me. I'm easy, and so you can have me. Displaying intimate parts of the body is a form of advertising for sex. So if you dress to attract sexual attention, you can hardly blame anyone else if that kind of attention comes your way. But dressing modestly tells the world I respect myself and I insist on being treated with respect. It's possible to be stylish and attractive without wearing something that is too short, low-cut, or see-through. Now, I can see when this book came out in 2012, members of Gal-Qaeda storming the Hammond ramparts, implying that, what? So it's our fault if we get raped? But that's not your point at all, is it?
No, it's not my point at all. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm a rape survivor. So this is something that, you know, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard to me, because I know, as somebody who was attacked, that it wasn't what I was wearing. It's an act of violence taken out in a sexual manner. So when you dress provocatively, you're not inviting somebody to rape you. A rapist is a deranged individual who has a violent streak that they take out in a sexual manner. So that being said, when you're exposing items of your body that will take a man of good character and cause his thoughts to look at you as an object or a sexual object as opposed to a dignified woman of God, you know, you have some culpability there of where you're taking a man's thoughts. Now, men and women think differently.
Oh, no, yes. No, you're not allowed to say that.
Yes. And our brains are different. I had a stroke a number of years ago, and the neurologist was telling me that men and women's brains are different. They're connected differently. Our hormones are different, the whole shot. So actually, speaking of CNN, we were talking about that a minute ago, there was a study, and the easiest way to find it is on the CNN's website, but there was a study that was done that showed that when men view women scantily clad, the area of their brain that fires off is the area that's associated with tools.
Mm.
Ouch.
Wow.
So when you're dressed scantily, you're inviting a man to think of you as a tool, as something to be used. So, you know, it's interesting because when the book first came out, I got, you know, was interviewed all over the place and secular news media and everything. I got a call from MTV. And I thought, oh,
I need to have the laugh track queued up.
Yeah. But do I really want to do this? And I prayed about it, and I thought, okay, I'll be a fool for Christ. I'll go ahead and I'll go on. So I went on, and there, you know, their shock jocks were like, you know, snicker, 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 right? You got the Christian woman on here, right? And I said, you know, that's the thing is that the men I know, that when they're around a scantily clad woman, it's hard because men do one thing at one time, right? And women kind of multitask, but men are very singularly focused. And so I said, so when men are around women who are scantily clad, they have that singular focus and it's hard for them to think of anything else. Silence. And the MTV guy says, oh my gosh, that's true. Because when I go out to these functions and these events, these women come up and they bare their breasts for me to autograph with my Sharpie, right? And it's just, all I can think of is look at her eyes, look at her eyes, look at her eyes, you know, because all I can do is look at what she's bearing. And I don't hear a word she says. And I don't remember her face. I don't remember her name. I don't remember anything that she said.
Wow.
All I remember is her boobs were hanging out. So do we really want to do that? You know, some women do. God have mercy on their soul, but if that's what they want. You know, but understanding as a woman, we don't get it. And women dress for other women, too, by the way.
Yes.
We ain't dressing for you. We're out dressing the other women in the group. So we don't. But there's two ways. I'm going to get back to the word on modesty, too. Because, you know, drawing undue attention to myself and dressing dignified, dressing modestly, dressing in an elegant manner does not mean frumpy. Because when you're dressed all frumpy, you're drawing attention to yourself. You know, you stand out from the crowd. So I think that people who purposely dress frumpy are trying to send the message that they're holy. How modest is that? How humble is that? It's not. So dressing, and Pius XII has this great quote. I wish I had it in front of me. I should have it memorized. But he talks about, we are not called to dress outside the times. So dressing modestly doesn't mean dress like our Blessed Mother. It doesn't mean dress like Queen Victoria, right? It means to dress in accordance with the times so that you don't stand out, but that you look dignified and beautiful. So as long as our intent is to please our husbands and not draw undue attention to ourselves, we're heading down the right path.
Now, Colleen Hammond, author of the Dressing with Dignity book, is on the Skype Maker Hotline with us. You can get the book autographed by Colleen in our store at mikechurch.com/shop. You can also join our live chat, which is in need of your participation there, by the way, at mikechurch.com/shop. Just go to mikechurch.com, click Mike Church Show Live chat, top of the page. If you have any questions for Colleen, you can put them in the chat room put them in the chat room. That would be the easiest way. I want to follow up on that. So are yoga pants, if the yoga pants please your husband, that's appropriate in public?
Well, if your husband wants you to wear them in public, no, because we're not called, we don't have to participate in sin. If he wants you to wear them for his benefit in the bedroom, that's fine. But yeah, you know, yoga pants are comfortable. You know, but is that all that life's about, is seeking comfort and forgetting about what's good for our fellow man? I don't think so. But maybe somebody feels that way. And I don't know about you. I mean, are you comfortable? You got a vest, a suit, a tie. Are you comfortable?
Perfectly.
I'm perfectly comfortable. You know, what's our concept? Again, there's that subjective language again. What does comfort mean? Slovenly?
Well, you know, remind me to come back to the yoga pants, but just speaking about the comfort thing for just a moment. And I read this from, it might have been the Earl of Chesterfield way back and then, letters to his son. But I read this from an old English text. It's OLDE, English text. And what the author was writing about was that clothes used to be thought of as the first line of defense against all the critters and everything that God has put on this earth out there. So clothes, also, not only do they serve the purpose of making us dignified and rising above the animals, but clothes also serve the purpose of protection. It's cold out. You don't go out naked in the cold. But people think, yeah, but it's hot out, so I'm going to strip. No, you got it wrong. Look at any engraving of any epoch in history, and you may see some slaves that maybe were stripped, but as Colleen said, they were stripped because they were slaves. They weren't stripped because being in the broiling sun without a shirt on cooled them all. It's the exact opposite. You'll be more cool if you keep a shirt on and sweat than you ever will be if you take it off, because the clothing, you know, holds the moisture and kind of wicks against your skin, which is why there's these incidences of dehydration in sports these days, because Nike invented this fabric that wicks the moisture away so you don't feel like you're sweating. Big mistake. You want to sweat, and you want to keep that clothes. So clothes also serve as a protection. They have two purposes then. One is the dignified purpose, and the other is very practical. Am I comfortable? Perfectly. Now, when it gets hot in the summer and I wear this around, might I take the jacket off? I probably would go to a lighter cotton shirt. I would go to a seersucker kind of a fabric for the coat. What I wear in the summer, I do every summer. And people looked at me like, I've got three heads. The one in the middle is square and it's purple colored. And they don't know what to think. I get told often in stores, why do you dress like that every day? I'm like, why not? Then I started saying, I don't know. Why don't you? And I just get looking like, I work here. I'm like, go back to my story about Bobby Jones going down the 18th green at one of the first Masters. Trousers, button-down shirt, necktie, buttoned all the way up. You can see him in his videos with that getup on. Dress has always mattered. And you know what else, Colleen? I don't know how far you got it because I don't have the book, but there is a history of dress. And you know, as you said, Pius XII said, look, you don't have to go around and wear a tunic.
Right.
If you don't want a tunic and an overcoat, shawl or whatever you call it, like Our Lady wears in almost every apparition. You don't have to do that. But as the times go, though, you can like look at some of the ancient English or take Shakespeare, for example. Shakespeare is often painted with this thing, and I'm not sure what the name of it is, but if you actually see one of these things that goes around your neck, that is made of fabric. It looks like it's plastic. It's not. It's actual fabric. And it basically takes the place of what we call today a necktie. And it's kind of the evolution of the tie. First, and it came and it went in different fits and starts. Ultimately, it becomes draped. No one is going to expect if you're English today that you run around with one of those Shakespearean collars on. However, I will say that for the most part, many of the English, the English, especially in the cities, have retained some of their Chestertonian, Balakian dress codes. There's not a photograph that I can find of Chesterton in anything other than what I am currently wearing. There's something to be said about that. You know, the guy always took himself like, I'm G.K. Chesterton, whatever that meant at that time. But he always took his dress seriously. I think that there is something that is rewarding for the person that's dressing as well as for the person that sees the dress. Do you write about this in the book?
Because it's a two-way street.
Yes.
You know, it's why they talk so much about having uniforms in schools. Because there's certain dress, I mean, there's dress appropriate for the occasion too. I get that question a lot. But when you're dressed comfortable, if you're dressed slovenly, you don't sit the same. You don't think the same. And there's a cognitive dissonance there. Let's throw around some more big words. But there's a disconnect. Let's just put it that way. That when you are dressed in a certain manner, you behave in a certain way. It's been proven over and over and over again.
Right.
So, you know, if you're dressed sloppy, then you're going to be a little rude. That's why they've gotten away from casual Fridays in the workplace, because they saw the level of work went down drastically at the places that instituted these casual Fridays. So what you wear has an impact not just on how others perceive you, but on how you perceive yourself. So if... And that's why, you know, I would never dress like a biker chick. That's just not me. I would be really uncomfortable dressed as a biker chick. But so how we dress impacts how we think about ourselves as well as how other people think about us. In 0.2 of a second, 2/10 of a second, people determine whether or not they trust us. 2/10 of a second.
That's people a quick judgment.
Judge. Yeah. People judge. You haven't opened your mouth. You haven't said a word. 0.2 of a second. So in less, and actually less than 7 seconds, people make more than 7 judgments about you. They determined your sexual orientation, your religion, your trustworthiness.
They've looked at me and they've gone, what point are you trying to make? You're trying to embarrass everyone? The whole dressing down on Fridays thing, you know, was very humorously portrayed in a movie.
Oh, and remember, Friday is Hawaiian shirt day. So, you know, if you want to, go ahead and wear a Hawaiian shirt and jeans.
And as you said, in other words, there's one day a week that you can come to work and not be on your A game. And it's Friday.
Right, exactly.
It's the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. My guest is Colleen Hammond, author of Dressing with Dignity. Now, I haven't promoted this, but you also are, and you mentioned this, and I think I know the presidential candidate of whom you spoke of previously. You also are a dressing consultant today, correct?
Yes. I work with everything from the stay-at-home mom up to presidential candidates, executives in the boardroom, women looking to get promoted in the workplace. And, you know, what's interesting is a lot of people beat me up over that. They're like, oh, you've sold out. I'm like, nothing's changed. I haven't changed anything. I'm teaching women to dress with dignity because guess what? When they dress according to these standards, they're taken more seriously. They take themselves more seriously. They get promoted. On an average, within 1 year, they're making 20% more. They're getting promoted only based on how I'm teaching them to dress. And it's always dressing in a dignified manner.
And like I always like to say, whenever I talk about any of these moral issues, and I think dressing is a moral issue of sorts, sin is easy, folks. It didn't take any effort to commit sin. It might take a little bit, you know, to get the pleasure part out of it. Doesn't take any effort. It takes effort to not sin. And I think that that's what's required of us. And you spoke earlier about this, and I couldn't wait to talk to someone that knew something about this. Because I tell my daughters this, 21 years old, just turned 21, 1 week ago today. And I have been begging them and pleading with them. But they go, oh, but Dad, that's not how everybody else dresses. I'm like, look, you don't understand. I was a 21-year-old boy, man, at one time. I know you're dressing the fashion that your friends wear, and your friends are dressing the fashion that you wear, so you're all thinking that you're dressing a fashion. All you're doing for the boys that are looking is causing them to think things that they otherwise... Now, they may be able to think them otherwise, but it requires a little more effort and imagination. And then when you get into the imagination part... Provided they haven't been corrupted or perverted, well, then it kind of, you can see where it goes there. It doesn't go anywhere. That's why all these things are related. They're all interconnected. So, as you said, look, if you're showing, then they're looking. And they're not looking because, you know, they want to figure out what PMS color that is of your skin so they can make a painting of you. You're imprinting something on their brain, and now they're thinking about something they shouldn't have been. And when you think of it like that, you're not caring. You are sinning because you're violating the commandment to love your neighbor. You are making yourself an object of a mortal desire, even if you don't intend it. It doesn't matter. Then I tell them, now that you know, you can't deny. Yeah. You're making yourself an object of a mortal desire, a sinful desire, and when you do that. Well, then, now you're placing him. This is an act against charity. It's an act against modesty. It could be an act against the sixth or the ninth commandments. It's just not good to go there. There's a sin component here in the way, especially the way women dress. And I don't know if you know this woman that wrote the two reviews of your book, Sarah Gold.
Yes, I know her because of the reviews. Yeah.
Well, you guilt tripped her into dressing differently because she goes, how dare this woman do this? You can read the huff and puff, but then she starts to mellow. So you wrote this, to wear the kind of clothing that can arouse unchaste thoughts or desires in others is to present them with the near occasion of sin. Bammo, right there. To wear that kind of clothing, knowing it has this potential, is a sin, either a mortal sin or a venial sin, depending on the degree or modesty. Now, Colleen, I started carrying this thing around with me.
Oh, yes. There you go.
Started carrying this thing around with me a month or so ago because I wind up in the confession line very often. So I should have it memorized by now, but in case I run into someone that I don't have it memorized to, it's called an examination of conscience for adults and teens. Any question you have, well, Mike's always talking about this, or I heard a sermon about this, and I don't understand, or was this wrong, is this right? If you read a pamphlet like this, the question will be answered here. And there are 9 occasions that you could be an accessory to someone else's sin. I'm looking at this, and at least 3 of them can be assigned to your dress. That is something... we ought to hear more of, and I'm glad. I think Pius XII was the last one to address it. I haven't seen anything from a pontiff since. And I know Pius XI dressed it forcefully, shoulders covered, down below the knees, nothing here, 2 fingers below the Eve apple, if you will, not the Adam's apple, for women. So I know Pius XI addressed it. We don't hear about this from the pulpit, do we? And I think that's another part of the problem. The modern church, number one, is another failing and something that needs to be changed. Talk about that for a minute, if you would.
Yeah, wait till I drop this bomb on you. EWTN, I was on with Doug Kett on what was his book show. Anyway, I was on his show, and then I was on, I was one of the only, I think, revert that was on Marcus Grody's The Journey Home. My show on Journey Home was in the top 10 of all their programs, the top 10 viewed and downloaded and reviewed on their website and everything. And then when I did the bookmark with Doug Keck, it was one of their top shows. They had me record a show the whole time. the topic became so controversial, they canceled everything that I had done. And it was, people were like, hey, where'd that interview go? Hey, where? So they finally, they kind of put it up, but they hid it. And then they forbade, now this is from one of their priests, they forbade the use of the name of my book or my name on air. So the priests, when they would be giving sermons about modesty, they would say a little purple book published by Tan. but they weren't allowed because women would be in an uproar. You know, it was kind of like, Sheen is the one that said that people don't hate the Catholic Church for what the Catholic Church is. They hate it for what they think it is.
What do they think
That's
it is?
What the whole, the book became this target for people said, oh, well, Colleen Hammond says wearing pants is a mortal sin. Never said it, never thought it, right? And so there was just all this controversy. And so Doug Kett called me and he said, I'm really sorry to do this to you, but we don't have advertisers. We totally run this, the organization on donations. And you are so controversial. I'm like, for skirts?
Why is that controversial? I don't get it.
So controversial.
On a Catholic website, this is controversy?
Yes.
Wow.
So now, and so they were just, and so one of the priests contacted me and told me, I went, seriously? He said, yeah, I mean, under obedience, we can't mention your name or the name of your book.
Now.
Oh, that went on.
now, this goes to the point, and this comes up on this show often. And we have a little internecine back and forth between listeners and myself from time to time. And I get asked the question, what is your hang up? What you in the dress? What is it? And I said, I don't know. I just feel compelled to do it. But I do know that whenever anybody asks me a question and has anything to do with any church function or the mass or anything that's sacramental in any nature whatsoever, I quote David Spade from the movie Joe Dirt. Really, man? This is where you want to be when Jesus comes back? You want to be dressed in that when you're standing in front of the Savior of the human race. That's the best you could. You had an entire week. You had 6 days of Netflix and ESPN and steak and every other Hades forsaken contrivance and a lack of mortification. And on Sunday, the one day, he asked you to go and stand in front of the sacrament, the blessed sacrament, in front of his body and his blood, represented on that altar, that's what you put on. Really? A pair of slacks and a Greg Norman polo shirt. No, dude. Sorry. Homie, don't play that game. Because you could have made the effort, Colleen, and anyone else could. You could have made the effort. Why do they used to call it the Sunday best? I don't care, right? If you only have one. I don't care if I see you every Sunday in the same white shirt and the same monotone black tie and the same sport coat and the same slacks and your hair combed. It matters. Like the priests say, the good priests say, lex adonde, lex credende, lex vivende. What we do in here, in that church, matters out there. And if you dress like a slob to go get the Blessed Sacrament, then you're going to be a slob out in the world who received the Blessed Sacrament. And people are going to look at you like, nothing. There's nothing to see here. So don't tell me it doesn't matter. I'm shocked to hear that you actually had to deal with this and a priest had to tell you this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, you know, it's kind of like a prophet's never accepted in their own hometown. I'm huge in the Protestant community and in the secular community, you know. People pay me a lot of money to help them dress in a dignified manner. And, you know, then my fellow Catholics are like, you know, oh, she's such a, you know, like, whatever. So it's just one of those things that over time I've come to say whatever. At first I used to be sobbing in the corner. I mean, how could people lie about me this way? How could people say these things? And my priest kept saying, I tried to warn you when you wrote the cute little book, you know, which I think there's 150,000 of them out there now. So, which is real. I can't wait to do a third edition.
150,024 to be exact.
Yeah, and I just signed them and sent them back. So yeah, you got them in the store, the bookstore. So that's good. But yeah, so it's just one of those things that, you know, when you stick your neck out, when you're a fool for Christ and you stick your neck out for the truth, you got to be ready for people to swing a hatchet at your neck. So it's painful. It's hurtful. But over time, I've just become a duck. I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's the truth. Deal with it. And if you don't want to deal with it, don't. But, you know, if you're talking about when it's hot. Okay, so you're in the South. I'm in Texas. So it gets hot here in the summer.
Sure it does.
So people are like, oh, I'm just going to start by. But God understands if I show up to Mass with a tank top and short shorts.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he understands. But he doesn't like it. He understands that you're being, you know, lazy. As you look at the altar and see with the priest, how many layers and layers and layers of clothing the priest has on, right? And I know priests that will turn the air conditioning on a really cold temperature so that it will encourage women to wear sweaters and whatnot in the summertime. But frankly,
smart.
From a woman's point of view, it is smart. From a woman's point of view, the coolest thing you could wear is a dress. Because there's nothing binding you around the waist. There's nothing clinging to you. It's just a nice, cool airflow. So when people say, oh, it's summer, I have to wear these skimpy little clothing. Yeah, wear a dress. Far cooler. It's far cooler.
Now, Colleen Hammond is the author of Dressing with Dignity and is on our Dudemaker Skype line with us. It's Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel. We are live on YouTube, on Facebook Live, and thanking all you for checking us out today. Remember, you can become a member of our little service here and subscribe to all of the 24-hour day, 7-day a week radio programming that we put out. Talk about being not welcome in your time. But yeah. You can change that, and I'll even give you a discount code that you can use for 50% off a yearly or monthly membership. Use the code JOIN2018 at CrusadeChannel.com and make us part of your daily listening habit. Let me ask you, are you encouraged? Have you made any, have you written any reviews? Have you consulted anyone on the resurgence of our sisters in Christ and the veil?
Oh, I've been veiling at Mass forever. Not forever. gosh. Well, because I'm a product of, you know, the 60s, you know, where we went to church one week and, you know, Mass was traditional Latin Mass. And the next week we showed up and the altar had been torn apart. And a priest announced from the pulpit that he and the director of religious education, Sister Mary, whose name has been changed to protect the guilty, were getting married. In the spirit of Vatican II, you know, so it was all these, it's a very confusing time, you know, in the church. And I couldn't wait. You know, I was born in 62, do the math. So I'm born in 62. I could not wait to be old enough to wear the veil because I was told once I received my first Holy Communion, then I could start veiling. So our church was one of those really progressive churches that made the changes even before the documents of Vatican II came out, right? So back by 67, our church had already ripped up the altar. And I mean, the documents weren't even out, you know.
God, Lord.
It was just, I was crushed. I wanted to wear the veil, doggone it. You know? So, and my mom had taught me everything that was holy, everything that's sacred is veiled. And so then, okay, well, we don't do that anymore. So I never got to wear the veil. And then I fell away from the faith and came back, blah, blah, blah. And when I came back to the faith, so much had changed in the 8 years I was gone, you know. And I came back and went, what happened to my church? So I started researching and studying, and I found the whole idea of the veil. And I remembered my thoughts and what I wanted when I was a little girl. So the more I researched, I was talking to Dr. Alice Van Hildebrand, who I'm just very happy to call a mentor. And she really explained the
you
whole
are
idea.
Fortunate.
Very, very blessed. The whole idea of the veil is everything in our faith that's holy and sacred is veiled. And it's because of a woman's intimate participation with God and creation that gives her that special dignity. So we don't veil because we're bad. We don't veil to hide ourselves. We veil ourselves in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament as a sign of, like, awe and humble.
No!
Just, yeah!
You mean there's this thing called a real presence there? No!
Oh, people been lying. Yeah, so once I really kind of got the whole awesomeness of how beautiful the whole concept of veiling is, I just feel very honored to be able to wear a veil to Mass. So there
it's
you go.
It's come back, and the young, especially, like, I go to a Latin Mass every week in our parish. And we've had in our parish for two years, first of November. So we're in our third year now. And there are teenage girls, there are 8-year-old girls, they're veiled.
Yeah.
They all are veiling. And I've noticed lately that there is now a fashion component to the veil. I've even noticed now, and I didn't, somebody pointed this out to me the other day, because they always notice, because I make the announcements for Father Ken or for Father Charles before the Mass, they don't have to. So before the Mass starts, I whatever they tell me to say, and I give a little story about the saint of the day. They let me do that. You know, it's kind of like Marty filming a young Frankenstein. I get the blow on a conch horn after Gene Wilder's done with the violin. But I always look up in the calendar what the liturgical color is for the day.
Right.
So if it's white, I'm going to have a white tie on. If it's purple, I always match. I noticed the other day, there's an entire family has four little girls in it. Those little girls were wearing purple veils. Not only were they veiling in sacredness and humility, they were veiling liturgically.
Wow.
So I'm noticing there's a fashion component to this. And I have a friend who, one of his daughters has a veil. It is the most magnificent veil. That's a lot saying about a veil that I've ever seen. It has like flower buds that are made out of a piece of fabric. It's about this wide. And they're turned and turned and turned and turned until you make a flower bud, and then they're sewn onto the veil. So I'm noticing that this is now becoming a fashion item.
Well, there you go. I've never seen anything like that. It sounds like silk ribbon embroidery. I do silk ribbon embroidery. I never thought of it. I got my veil when I was in Europe. And it's just a really heavy, sturdy, like a Spanish lace, and just it's beautifully, beautifully made. So people ask me, oh, I want to get my veil where you got yours. But, you know, so I guess, yeah, I guess they could be a fashion statement, too. I mean, women wore hats. I mean, it's not just about a veil. It's about, you know, when you're in front of the Blessed Sacrament, wearing something, as long as you're not wearing one of those grandiose type, you know,
Kentucky Derby hats. Right, you know, right.
It's where you're blocking the view of the altar. But, yeah, I guess it could be a fashion thing. For me, too, I'm sorry, but quite frankly, when you have a bad hair day, it's awesome. Just cover it up.
Now, in your book, you actually quote Dr. Alice Van Hildebrand, who pointed out that from the time that Adam and Eve were booted out of the Garden of Eden, it has been seen a sign of respectability and distinction to have clothing totally veiling our bodies, especially the female body. Why? And Dr. Hildebrand makes the point that anything that's precious, mysterious, and sacred is hidden from view. It is veiled. And then to dress modestly is the appropriate response that women should give to their mystery. So women are precious, mysterious, and sacred. And then you say, Sarah Goldside is something I'd forgotten about. I just saw this movie the other day. I should have been reminded of it. And the Richard Gere and Julia Roberts movie, Pretty Woman. There's a transformation that takes place. The harlot comes in acting all harlot-y, right? The harlot comes in acting all harlot-y and does what harlots do. And sometime during the course of the film, she begins to see that, what do I want to be a harlot anymore? That guy called me a whore. Well, you kind of are. And she really gets upset when George Costanza hits on her at the polo races. Of course, he has an ulterior motive. But then along comes, Hector Elizondo. Along comes Hector Elizondo. Not only does he save Anne Hathaway in the Princess Diaries, he saves Julia Roberts.
That's right.
He saves Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, and he takes her down on Rodeo Drive. And, of course, all the ladies in the nice shops are, oh, well, who is this? Who is this harlot coming into our store? And the point is, that Sarah Gould makes, there was a transformation there that went from good to bad, and more was better, where less was worse and sinful, more was better. And to see that in popular culture, we don't see, I'm trying to think of an instance where that's been repeated lately. Can you think of one?
No. Not off the top of my head.
But the point is more is better. Now, What advice would you give, say you had a client and said, Colleen, I'm just going to go to the grocery store on Saturday and I don't want to be a slob. I want to dress with some dignity. To the ladies in the audience, and there are many in the chat room right now, what advice would, how would you tell them to approach that?
You know, I do teach women how to do what's called a capsule wardrobe, where you just have 22 pieces of articles of clothing that mix and match. It's kind of like Granimals for adults.
Okay.
Anybody remembers Granimals?
Granimals.
You remember those? Yeah.
I do remember Granimals. I'm not saying I had any. I'm just saying I remember.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I do, is I teach women how to dress appropriately for their body type, their coloring, their personality, their state in life, that type of thing. So, and there's nothing wrong with having... You know, the fashion industry used to have seasons where, like, oh, it's this summer, their summer collection and their winter collection. And now they have a spring, summer, fall, and winter collection. And now, actually, what they have is, because in China they can produce these fads so quickly, the fashion industry actually changes weekly, where we'll introduce something weekly to get people. So we have this disposable fashion. So if you're into minimalism, if you're into recycling and you don't want to fill up the junkyards with stuff, then you don't need a lot of clothing. And think about all the people, the very successful people, who have a uniform. I mean, what do you always see Mark Zuckerberg wearing? You know, this gray shirt. Carolina Herrera, who is one of my favorite designers, she always has a white blouse and a black skirt on. So you don't have to have a lot of clothing, number one. So find something where you have, I pretty much wear the same thing to church every Sunday. You know, especially in the winter when you're wearing a coat anyway, you know, you could be wearing pajamas for anybody knows, right? But, you know, so you dress up, but I have an outfit I wear on Sundays. I have a nice outfit I wear around the house.
Uh-huh.
This is actually what I wear around the house, probably without the scarf. But then you have a nice outfit that you you go out in, you go to the store in, and then you have something that you sleep in, which for a woman, I hope is something pretty. You know, because when you're wearing something pretty, you just feel better about yourself. So have that one outfit that you just pull on when you're heading out the door, and take this is my 5 minute. I get ready in 5 minutes in the morning. It doesn't have to be a lot. Just at least fluff, put on some mascara, maybe a little blush on your cheeks, and maybe a little bit of chapstick, a lip gloss, give your lips a little, you know, something. But just something to identify with your own personal dignity. And so that other people treat you better. They really do. And I'm sure you've seen the same thing. And when you present yourself in a dignified manner and you carry yourself in a dignified manner, people do treat you differently. So just have that one outfit that's your go-to outfit. And that's what you put on when you're going to leave, and slip it on when you're heading out the door.
So they usually I can tell because they want to call me sir. You get called sir.
And there you go. Yep.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm just here for the whiskey. You don't have to call me sir. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, I'm kidding. I do the same thing. And Mrs. Church will tell, some people will ask, does he ever, like, you know, run around with short pants on and a skanky toenail showing out of his flip-flops and a tank top? She goes, no, never. Again, my model are guys that I respect. My model is Chesterton. I don't ever want to be photographed for the rest of my life in anything other than what I'm proud to say that I'm wearing at this moment. Now, if I'm at a golf tournament, you know, I show up and people are like, what's with the slacks? I'm like, what's with the bony legs?
I'm sorry, men in shorts, they just remind me of frogs.
I used to do it. I don't understand. I'm like, what makes you think people want to see your skanky, hairy, nasty, not tanned legs? Well, what if my legs are tanned? Maybe they can guess about your tan. So I do the same thing.
Right.
I have a pair of slacks or whatever and a decent shirt. If it's during the winter, you know, I have a vest that I will use. It's got the thin slate. It's very warm. Again, it's not comfortable. It's practical.
Right.
But it has a sense of dignity behind it. Before you go, we're just about out of time. We mentioned that Pope Pius XI was, I believe, the last to mention dress. And he wasn't just talking about dress as it applies to dress at Mass. He was talking about dress in general. Do you get any chance to talk to young ladies, to young girls. And if you do, is some form of dignity coming back? Or because all I see today are tramps. I see the most famous women are the most abominably dressed and are flaunting and just begging 20-year-old boys to do things in their rooms that they should not be doing. Case in point, Katy Perry on the Super Bowl 3 years ago was an absolute disgrace to the human race. You couldn't have been less dignified than that. And, of course, Super Bowl cameramen were only too happy to capture this and broadcast it around the world. These are the role models that our daughters, my daughters, have. You get to talk to the young, and what do you say to the young?
Yeah, well, and then you have Lady Gaga, who is Stephanie, who's a Catholic, who her very tragic story. If you've ever seen her thing on Netflix, and bless her heart, you know, and her mother, very very staunch Catholic, you know, just like all Stephanie, you know. But I hold up, and girls say to me they want to be like the Duchess of Cambridge. They want to be like Kate Middleton. So that is, you know, and we just kind of try to hide some of the pictures from, and I think the Holy Family has succeeded in getting those things off the internet. But she does dress in a very beautiful, very elegant, simple manner. And of course they had to bring her hemlines down a little bit because she does a lot of squatting to be around with children and everything. And they're like, yeah, we got to bring those hemlines down just a little bit. So, but I have seen a bit of a resurgence with people wanting to be, you know, a little bit more elegant. And is it the pendulum swinging back? Maybe. I don't care. Let's take advantage of it. But I think when young ladies are shown how to dress. This used to be taught. Now, see, this goes again. I can talk about this, another soapbox. This goes back to when you and I probably were in school. I don't know. Did you have, like, the girls in middle school had the sewing classes and the cooking classes, and boys had
home ec.
Home ec. God forbid.
My daughter Madison's nickname to some of our neighbors is home ec.
Oh.
She was one of the only girls that wanted to go to home ec and took it seriously. I mean, she wanted to make the dresses. She wanted to bake the cakes. She wanted to do the whole nine yards.
Right. Well, we homeschooled our children. So all four of our children, boys and girls, learned how to sew. All four of them learned how to cook. All four of them know how to work with wood. All four of them know how to change, you know, work in an electrical socket, you know, and make sure that the ground is there. Yeah. Because you know what you can do? I always say this at homeschooling conferences. You know what you can do? You can go to Home Depot or Lowe's, and I think they need 4 to 5 people for a class. You can go in and ask them to do a class for you and just bring all your children. Make it a homeschooling function.
There you
and
go.
And they can teach you how to do all these things. So anyway.
Rachel Simpson, are you listening? field trip with the Simpson kids. You got 5. Take them to Home Depot, let them learn electricity 101. There you go.
It truly, I mean, we've lost track of how to really, you know, take care of a home. My best friend's husband, you know, he's a doctor and all that kind of stuff, and they had a leaky faucet. He went out and bought a $300 faucet. I'm like, dude, let me change this for you. You just need a $5 gasket, you know. And so I just, for fun, I had my daughter do it. You know, I said, yeah, honey, get in there and change Mr. So-and-so's, you know. So, but I think girls just don't know it. And that's why I've really tried to focus on teaching girls to dress with dignity, but not just why, but how to do it, how to dress for your body type, how to dress for your coloring, how to dress for certain events. Because they get out of college and they go to get a job. I'm sorry, sweetie, you ain't going to get a job dressed like that. You know, not the job you want. And how many of our young adults are coming out of college and they can't find jobs anymore?
No.
Let me get started on the education system. But yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of that, Professor Anthony Solon was on this show about a year ago, and the question about sexuality came up, and about homosexuality. And he goes, Mike, you can't talk to the girls. I can't do it. Only the women can talk to them about it. Is it the same way? So fashion, I would assume, is probably the same way.
Absolutely. I know my husband's an executive at IBM, and he would have a situation where one of his employees was dressed inappropriately. And if it was a woman, he had a female executive that he was friends with, and she was one of my clients. But anyway, so she understood the whole concept because she came to me, hey, your husband says you do this, and she wanted to get promoted. And so my husband cannot talk to his employees, female employees, about their inappropriate dress. It has to be another woman. Otherwise, it's sexual harassment.
So just in conclusion, Colleen Hammond is the author of Dressing with Dignity. Sarah Gould wrote this about your book back in 2012. For me personally, this book has got me thinking. Perhaps I should take a good hard look at my wardrobe with a fresh eye. Perhaps I should wholeheartedly pray to the Spirit for guidance. After all, God made me and knows what is best for me, what I require to live a happy and a fulfilled life. As it happened, several weeks after reading Colleen's book, I find myself on the hottest day of the year in adoration, unthinkingly wearing a tank top and shorts. While I wouldn't necessarily say I was immodestly dressed, I felt decidedly unsettled. I concluded that showing more skin, especially in holy places like the church or the Adoration Chapel, is below my dignity as a lady and should be avoided. And if careful consideration is given to dressing for church and God, then the same care should be extended for dressing for daily life. That's Amen. A great way to part out of this. They're one and the same.
Yeah, well, because God is everywhere. You know, it's just like, you know, God's not just in the church. He's there in the Blessed Sacrament physically, but God is everywhere. So it's not like you only are dressing for church. I mean, you want to bring God your best because, you know, that Sunday you're there to worship. That's the thing we do, right? but to remember that God is everywhere and God is in your heart and in your soul and you are a temple of the Holy Ghost. So kind of try to remember that.
I should have started with this question, Colleen, and now I only have 2 minutes, so I can make it quick. When you wrote the book, Dressing with Dignity, was this revenge? Was this going like, all right, I'm fine, I'm going to get you, my pretty. I'm going to put it all down in words, and I hope you buy a copy. Or did you just see, my goodness, somebody has got to do something about that?
Yeah, it wasn't my idea. I was at a conference out in San Jose with Alice von Hildebrand the very first time I met her. And she had just come out with the book, Privilege of Being a Woman. And I sat literally on the floor, which I didn't want to do because, you know, that's not very dignified. My mother was not, would not have been happy. But at her feet, literally at her feet, learning. And she started talking about this whole idea of covering and modesty and everything. And here I'm sitting in a not too modest outfit, right? But she never said a word to me. She never said a word to me. She just taught me. And then I said, your next book really needs to be about this. And she said, oh, honey, nobody's going to listen to an old lady. With your background in television and modeling, you need to write the book. And I didn't want to. So I went to the chapel to pray about it, which, of course, when you don't want to do something, I need to pray about it, right? And there was a book sitting there in the pew, and it was the 40 Dreams of John Bosco, which is full of stuff about impurity. And I did one of those things where you flip the book open, and then I just opened to a certain page, put my finger down, and then I read it, and it said, in matters of immodesty, there are no sins that are not mortal. And I went, oh, best 2 out of 3. You know, so I did it 3 times, and it came up. So I felt that was something I needed to do. And it, you know, it's a great excuse to go shopping because I pretty much had to get rid of everything. So...
It's amazing.
Not something I wanted to do.
Well, it's amazing how when I had a priest told me that that's the virtue, the cardinal virtue of prudence. Some people, well, now that's discernment. Well, it could be either one. But when you ask and you're serious about asking and you ask for spiritual help, it's amazing. You got the answer you didn't want. It's something. It this happens. You get the answer that he wants. It may not be the answer that you wanted. And I think if we did that more, and boy, do I need to train myself to do that, we'd all be better off. Colleen Hammond is the author of Dressing with Dignity, and you can get the book again in our store. It's a new arrival, signed and dated by Colleen at MikeChurch.com/shop. Her website is at ColleenHammond.com.